Jeff Tiberi, WNC Capitol reporter. Good to have you here. And Jeff, lawmakers are coming back to Raleigh. What are we expecting them to do?
Well, 170 state lawmakers, some of them are coming back. How many precisely, we're not sure about. And the number is key because we're talking about overrides of gubernatorial vetoes. And that was the expressly stated purpose for the legislature to come back in early August. There aren't going to be enough Republicans to do some of these override votes. So we're not going to see, at least from what I've been told so far, we're not going to see override votes that we were thinking we might see a few weeks back. In terms of redistricting, obviously there was a remedy, a ruling that came down from the federal three-judge panel this week. Lawmakers will get to work a little bit more on redistricting. I think the most likely thing we're going to see by the end of the week is a schedule for public comments and a location as well, when and where the constituents of North Carolina can weigh in on redistricting. It is possible that other issues do come up in the next few days, but we're kind of in a wait-and-see mode here.
Now, interesting about redistricting, they do have a new deadline of September 1st to draw maps. And mm-hmm. so seems like now with them back in Raleigh would be a good time to really get going on that. What do you think about that?
The Republicans have pushed for a robust public comment period, and that's going to happen. That happened a few years ago coming out of the 2010 census when they redrew maps in 11. I think you're going to see public comment in, you know, from Currituck to Cherokee, I mean, through Mountains Coast to Piedmont, you're going to see public comment throughout. Drawing maps is a highly sophisticated exercise. It's changed from 30 or 40 years ago. Computers, by and large, do this. And lawmakers are able to draw specific boundaries, districts by the block. They can draw certain lawmakers in or out of areas, certain neighborhoods for political gain, for political advantage. And this is something, if Democrats were in power, they would be doing it to bolster their majorities and their benefits as well. So to your question, is now the best time to do it? I would contend that they have a very good sense of what these maps are going to look like. They might have two or three or four different iterations, but what they're hashing out behind closed doors in the coming weeks is just what the districts are going to look like. I think that some of this is politics and it's for show, and what they're trying to do is make it seem as though everybody has got a voice in this thing. Now, and this isn't meant to be a pejorative comment toward the Republicans. That's not really how this works. Legislators are going to draw these maps. They're going to draw them to, you know, what is most suitable to them, and we'll get a glimpse of those, I think, toward the end of this month. It's possible that if they hit certain deadlines and certain guidelines set forth by the court, that the deadline would kick back to September 15th.
I see. Now, kind of a mixed ruling for the plaintiffs because they did not get the special elections that they were hoping for.
Yeah. So plaintiffs, lawyers for the Southern Coalition for Social Justice, asked for two things that didn't happen. One were special elections, and two would have been for maps to be drawn in short order in 2 weeks, due by, I think it was August 15th. And that points to, you know, this ability that lawmakers have to, in fact, do maps quickly, and they're not even necessarily, it's not like they're drawing them with, like, you know, stencil and paper or whatnot. But maps can be passed quickly. The court said it wants some time for public comment, so that will take place during the month of August, and there won't be a special election. And, you know, from my standpoint, I wondered who would have benefited from a special election. And I don't think it's clear, because you would have had a compressed election schedule. And follow me if you can. Generally, in even-numbered years, we have a primary in the spring and a general election in the fall, and those determine the state House and state Senate seats. What this would have done is added another layer to that. So we would have had another primary and a special general election, which would have likely taken place in between like November or December and March of this year. And you're talking about two primaries and two generals within 12 months. And that's a lot of scheduling and planning and campaigning. And I really wondered about, you know, did the Democrats were pushing for this. I wondered if they had enough money and enough candidates to really make this a successful play for them. So we'll never know. I mean, we're pontificating a little bit here, but it's not going to happen. And I did wonder, if there had been special elections, who really would have benefited from that?
Yeah, and pretty significantly, I think, with the order that the three-judge panel issued, they said, you know, you're going to draw these maps, you're going to come back, and you're going to present them to the court for us to review. Is that routine order, or is that sort of a warning to lawmakers to knock out the funny business?
It's a good question. I think I would most immediately turn to last year, which is when congressional maps, I mean, these are state districts. When we think about the U.S. House and the 13 representatives our state has in Congress, in the U.S. House, those maps were struck down in early 2016. Lawmakers went back in February of last year. They were given a short window, about 2 weeks, to draw and pass new maps, which they did. And those districts have not been struck down. So there are new maps. There's a new alignment. But from my perspective, one thing that's interesting is before those maps were struck down, it was a 10-3 Republican to Democrat advantage from North Carolina House members. Today, it is a 10-3 advantage, Republicans over Democrats in the U.S. House for politicians from North Carolina. So I don't think it's going to change all that much.
Yeah, and 10-3, not just 10-3, but as you note, they weren't even competitive. There were no competitive races in congressional seats this year or last
year. No, there were not. And we've heard some noise and some chatter about how, nationally Democrats are focusing on several seats in the state. The second, I believe, is one of the districts. George Holding is a three-term incumbent. They're going to make a run at his seat. I'm unconvinced that that's going to be particularly competitive. We shall see, obviously. But this has really been the name of the game in national politics and in many states as well over the last decade, is this shift to the right. And a lot of these elections, because of the way maps have been drawn, are not competitive when we get to November. They're competitive in primaries, and it's low turnout, and you often have very conservative folks, or you have an incumbent or somebody who's a little bit more of a mainstream Republican, and you've got a candidate who is pulling him or her pretty far to the right.
Now, David Lewis in the House has said that when lawmakers come back, they're going to be basically taking up, the bills that were caught in limbo that didn't get passed. Now, you recently reported on a new effort to push for voter ID. How likely do you think it will be that we'll see significant legislation like that coming up while lawmakers are back?
I don't think we're going to see it in August, partially because you don't have the full Republican caucus there, and they likely would need that to push forward an election bill. They are coming back in September, so we could, of course, again see it then. From my reporting and what I've learned is that Republicans are looking long and hard at taking another stab at voter ID. And your listeners will remember, 4 years ago, the election law they passed had a whole bunch of stuff in it. There was voter ID, but it also reduced early voting and eliminated same-day registration and eliminated registration for teenagers. This would be what former Governor Pat McCrory calls a clean voter ID bill, which would just be a requirement for voter ID. And what they're looking at doing is putting it on the ballot as a referenda. So you or I or whoever votes in North Carolina would potentially weigh in on this. And that's interesting, I think, because what we know nationally is that people, by and large, do look favorably upon voter ID. Now, regardless of what the pretext may be or regardless of who may be most impacted by it, generally speaking, Americans support voter ID. Lawmakers did this in Missouri last year. It passed almost by a 2-1 margin. And lawmakers think, this remains to be seen, but lawmakers think that this approach to voter ID would have better footing in court.
Now, nationally, the Republican effort to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act seems to be mostly over. That was a 7-year promise by Republicans. Now, we had here in Western North Carolina, Patrick McHenry as a congressman had scheduled some town halls. He had to postpone the ones here in Buncombe County due to a diagnosis of pneumonia. But anyway, he had some town halls planned. Mark Meadows, our other congressman, had one scheduled for Monday. Are you hearing anything about town halls in your neck of the woods and the potential response from constituents regarding health care or any other matters?
I am not hearing about town halls in this portion of the state. I think that this is a tough one for lawmakers, right? I mean, who knew healthcare could be so difficult? And I felt for a long time that they were going to get right up to the edge, which they did, and they're going to back off of it. I get it from a messaging standpoint. This is Obamacare and this is evil, and you create this narrative, however incorrect it might be in parts, that this has been a woeful failure when it comes to healthcare. That's politically what they've done, and I think they've done it with some success, Republicans and conservatives, because you look at how well they've done in the 2014 and 2016 national elections, but you move from the politics to the policy, and there just hasn't been a proposal that enough of the Republicans can come together on. So they're going to walk away from this for a while. Who knows if and when they'll get back to it. I mean, really, I mean, it's a mess for sure, but I think it just points to how complicated this is and how diverse the country is and the constituencies are within Republican districts across the country.
And I'm asking you to speculate now, but how damaging do you think those votes that they took on legislation that was very unpopular will be? How damaging will that be to their reelection chances, considering that they took these damaging votes and then the bill ultimately didn't even pass?
I just don't think we're going to know what the pulse of the American voters is in 6 months or in 15 months. So where are folks? Where is our country? You know, are we at war? Has something more dramatic happened? Have impeachment proceedings begun? I mean, who knows in this era of what just feels like chaos in Washington? I think, getting back to your question, sure, on one hand, these votes and this failed attempt to pull back Obamacare could be awful for the Republicans in 2018. They could lose 25 or 30 seats. Could, right? And the Democrats could take back the House, and then we'll just have, I think, further gridlock in Washington. Or what if something more significant happens in our country or abroad in the next year or so and changes the dynamic, riles up the voters, and it really just changes the complexion of the game?
Well, Governor Roy Cooper, he signed a bunch of bills. One of the more significant ones is clearly the renewable energy bill. That was one sought after by solar energy companies, it seemed, and also included this moratorium on wind energy. But he also issued an executive order along with that. What can you tell me about that?
Jeremy, the Energy Solutions Bill is something that took a long time to really orchestrate and bring all the players together. We're talking about the solar industry, the energy utility industry, and also some environmentalists. And when that bill emerged out of the House, people were really, there was large, wide bipartisan support of it. Governor Cooper was a backer of this. But then it went over to the Senate. And Senate Majority Leader Harry Brown, who's a Republican from Onslow County, attached to it a wind moratorium. And this is something that he has long coveted, doesn't want wind energy projects in the state, had initially proposed 4 years as a wind ban in North Carolina, the eastern part of the state, primarily where these projects would go. And they attached that to this bill. It was reduced 18 months, and that's where the bill landed on the governor's desk, and really kind of a dichotomy, if you will, of policy within this, opening up solar regulations and easing access for residents to get panels on their roofs, but also this ban on wind energy. So what the governor did is he signed it, but he also issued this executive order that instructs the Department of Environmental Quality to continue issuing permits and to also continue recruiting wind energy projects to the state. So, you know, he was trying to throw some shade on that portion of the bill. What's also interesting, and maybe this is a little insidery, but had he vetoed this, he likely would have sustained the veto, which he has not yet done. So, you know, some of the calculus there was the governor wants to be able to sustain some vetoes and look strong. But what folks in the solar industry told me was Cooper did at one point go to them and he said, you know, how long, can you tell me how long it would take to bring all the players back to the table on this issue if we were to have to renegotiate? And they said, you know, governor, that's not going to take long at all. We can tell you that it's never going to happen. So I think that was some of, you know, what the governor was weighing. This took a long time to get this through, and, you know, he signed it into law.
Yeah, and, you know, we've just had reports, you know, showing how solar energy is booming across the state. So it may be, you know, pitting one booming industry versus one emergent industry in the state with wind energy. Just real quick, have you heard anything from those wind developments that were already in the works as far as whether or not the executive order satisfies their needs to continue on with their projects?
I have not. It's a really good question. And if I learn more, I'll let you know. They said that this was going to cause them to have to shut down what they were doing, but I don't know if and when that is in fact going to take place.